Hey, it's great to be here. Hey, I don't know if you know Chris that well. Something that he wants people to know is that Chris just really loves cats. I mean, he loves cats. In fact, he was telling me right before service, especially with a little sweet and sour sauce. I mean, just, he did not say that. He did not. Chris, though, he needs some cat therapy. So if you have a kitten around the house that you want to donate to Chris, that'd be great. It is so much fun to be with you guys. And what Chris was talking about, that family framework, my wife and I work with churches all over the country. In fact, we get the opportunity to work with churches in Europe and other places in the world. And the family framework that your team has put together is amazing. It really is. It's one of the most helpful things we've come across. So I really encourage you to check out that little book that he had. If you have kids at home in the home, I encourage you to pick it up, take a look at it, and also connect with some of the staff here at LifePoint and kind of talk about it a little bit. Love being here. This church is amazing. I've heard a lot about the church. Your pastor is incredible and his wife and have planted the church and to see what God has done and then grown to multiple locations around Columbus. Just an incredible church worship today. Wow. Let's give a little appreciation for the worship team. Unbelievable. We've had so much fun. We've been actually in Ohio for a week. We spoke at a family conference up in Sandusky at the beginning of the week. And then this weekend, we've been speaking at a family conference right here at LifePoint. And it's given us a chance to really kind of get to know Columbia a little bit. Over this week, I became an Ohio State fan. So yesterday, cheered the Buckeyes on to a big win over Michigan State. Yeah. And as I get on the plane, I will not be an Ohio State fan anymore. But that's okay. I was for a week. Went downtown and saw the North Market. That was really cool and sampled some of the food. Now, I had a friend tell me, if you're in Columbus, he used to live here for many, many years. He said, if you're in Columbus, there's one thing you have to try. And so a couple of days ago, we took his word for it and we tried it. And I'm just trying to figure out if he meant it or if I was being punked. You know what I'm saying? So we tried Skyline Chili. Yeah. What's up with that? Okay. How many of you are big fans of Skyline Chili? That kind of helps. Okay. And you like cats too, right? Same people? Same. I just want to say, you know chili doesn't go on spaghetti, right? You know that. All right. Just fortunately, we tried Skyline a couple of days ago. So if you'll know what I'm talking about, kind of have worked through that particular problem. And we're good today. We're good. In fact, I'm looking forward to eating again. So that's going to be fun. Hey, it is so much fun. My wife is here with me, Sherry. She's here on the front row. And then I think we might have a picture of my family coming up in a minute. And we have two kids. Yeah, there they are. We have two kids. We have Mike and Brittany. Mike is the young man, tall young man there on your left. He's married to Hillary, and they have three kids. And then our daughter, Brittany, just got married about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they just moved from South Carolina to where we live. We live right outside Denver, Colorado. They came out there, and they're going to help. We attend, actually, a church plant that's younger than LifePoint, but a church plant nonetheless. And they're going to come, and they're going to help out with that church plant. My son is executive pastor at the church plant, and all of that is meaningless. The most important thing are those three little kids you see on the screen right now. The oldest one is Maggie, and Maggie is 8 years old, and then the middle one is Molly, and she's 5, and then the youngest is Mason, and he's 18 months old. Do I have any? I just got to figure out the crowd. I know who the Skyline Chili people are. I'll talk to you afterwards or not, but I want to know, how many grandparents do we have? Grandparents. All right. Right afterwards, we're going to come up here and we're just going to share stories about our grandkids, okay? That'll take about 3 hours and it'll be a blast, right? Grandkids are the best. I just want to tell you, we're going to talk about families today. We're not just going to talk about parenting. We're not just talking about kids at all. We're going to talk about families in general. But if you have kids at home, I just want to give you hope. There is a goal, and the goal is someday they will reproduce, and you will have grandkids, and you will do what I did when the grandkids were born. I see somebody nodding their head. The day the first one was born, I went, oh, that's why we had kids. Okay, now I understand the equation. Our job is to spoil them, to sugar them up, to let them stay up as late as they want, let them get as crabby as they want, and then off we send them back to their mom and dad. They live about 30 minutes from us. It's wonderful. Today, what I want to do is I want to just kind of, we're going to take a step out for a little while today from the series on Exodus. I love the book of Exodus. I love the way you guys are kind of going through it a little bit at a time. We're going to step back for a minute, though, and we're going to talk about this idea of a family. I want to talk about how to build a dream family. Now, I want to say up front, I'm not just talking about mom, dad, and two kids. Many of us, most of us, have parents, and that's part of our family. We may be single, but we have a group of friends around us, and that's part of our family. We may be married and have kids, married and no kids, single, have kids, single, don't have kids in the home. All of that is family. And what I want to do is talk for a few minutes today is what does it look like to build a dream family? How could we build a dream family? Okay. And as we drive into that, I think we have another picture. Let's go to that next picture and see if you can. Anybody recognize who these two are? I see some nods. Somebody want to yell out an answer? What is this family's name? Gaines, that's right. Chip and Joanna Gaines, all right? They're from a series on TV that many of us have watched called Fixer Upper. And I got to tell you, I am a Fixer Upper fan. If that means I have to turn in my man card, I had to give it up long ago, so I'm cool with that. But you know the premise, if you've seen it. If not, it's very simple. Chip and Joanna Gaines, they find a family that's looking for a house. They look around Waco, Texas. They find some broken down, dilapidated home. They pick it out, and then Chip and Joanna go in, and they turn it from a fixer-upper into a dream home, into a model home. And I thought, what would it look like to do that with families? Well, what would fixer-upper families look like? And I think to do that, we kind of have to have a picture. What does a model family look like? Well, I grew up around some model families, honestly. I don't know if you did or not, but a couple of families I grew up around, there was one named, the dad's name was Rob, and the wife was Laura. And Rob worked for a television show, a comedy television show, and he wrote for them. And Laura stayed at home with their little boy, Richie, and Richie was kind of a mess, but you know, they were a fun family, and they fought once in a while. But what was great about Rob and Laura is every fight they ever had, they resolved in 30 minutes, okay? And what a great goal in life. There's another family that I grew up with named Mike and Carol. And Mike and Carol were a blended family. And they had six kids. He had three boys. You're laughing at my neighbors. She had three girls, one of them in curls. And their family was somewhat chaotic, but they really loved each other. And then the other one I grew up around that I really thought was kind of a model family, even though it wasn't mom and dad and a couple kids, it was a single dad named Andy. And Andy had a wonderful little guy that he had by a previous marriage, and his aunt had moved in to help raise him, and the little guy was a little rambunctious, but he was a great kid. Did anybody else grow up around the same families I grew up around? Yeah, there's only one problem with those families, right? None of them are real. Those are all, the younger people are going, what are you talking about? Those are all television shows that I grew up around in the 60s and 70s. And that was, the Brady Bunch and the Andy Griffith Show. And they were model families, but they just weren't real. And so we can't see model families from TV. So what about the Bible? We go to the Bible for everything, right? And so, of course we do. So let's find model families in the Bible. So we go back into the Old Testament. The very first family has got to be a model family. You got Adam, you got Eve, you got Cain. He had Abel. Uh-oh. You know, when one of the siblings kills the other one. Not exactly a model family. So we move a little bit forward. We go to Noah and the ark and the animals and the archy-archy and all that cool stuff. And then after the archy-archy and the ark lands and they plant a vineyard and Noah just gets drunk and passes out and he's naked. And that's not really a model family. So you go to the guy who's the man after God's own heart, right? King David. That's got to be a model family. I got to tell you guys, if you haven't dove into some of Samuel and 1 Kings and the story of David's life, don't just read it with your kids because it's not PG-13. It's R-rated, right? David's family put the fun in dysfunction, okay? The reality is there are no model families anywhere. Every family is a fixer-upper. My family is a fixer-upper. It's funny that we did a conference on parenting this weekend. We used to do a lot of conferences on parenting. In fact, I just had it hooked up as a dad, and we had a kid, and he was great, and he was, you know, he had little problems along the way, but he was always obedient, and we went and we told everybody how to be parents and just be a parent like me, and then God gave us a second child, a girl. And I told my wife after about 3 years, my daughter was about 3 years old, I said to my wife, if I ever tell anyone how to parent again, just punch me in the throat, okay? Just punch. And she's a wonderful girl, and to this day is wonderful. But our family's a fixer-upper family. I mean, we have good days, we have bad days, and we have days I wish that we could forget. And you probably have a fixer-upper family too. You may be a mom and dad and two kids. You might be a single mom or a single dad. You might be empty nest. You might live alone. You might still be living with your parents. Maybe you're married for 50 years, or like my wife and I, 36 years, or maybe you're divorced or never been married, and maybe you're a blended family. All of our families are fixer-upper families. So where do you start on a fixer-upper family? Well, any repair job can seem overwhelming. Right now, we are refinishing our basement. We're putting an apartment in our basement because, as I said, our daughter and her husband are helping with a church plant, so they're not making a lot of money, so they moved in with us and are going to move into our basement. And when we walked into the basement to think about fixing it up, it was overwhelming. There was so much stuff, and where do we even start? We had to just dive in. And your family may be that way too. You may be overwhelmed. You may be busy. You may be stressed. There may be pain. There may be anger. There may be disappointment. There may be bitterness in your family. Where do you start as a fixer-upper? Well, what I want to do for the next few minutes is just kind of follow the pattern that they use actually on the television show Fixer Upper and apply that to our family based on some scripture, okay? And so if you've watched the show, you know it always goes the same. It starts with a house that needs to be fixed up. And then Joanne comes up with this with a better picture of that house, and she creates a better picture. And then Chip goes in and he does demo work. He tears out all the things that need to go away. And then Chip and some contractors come in and they do new construction inside the house. And finally, the contractors and then Joanne comes back in and they do the finish work. They finish it and make it look great. So that's kind of what we're going to do today. We're going to follow Colossians chapter 3. If you have a Bible with you, you can take a look at that chapter, Colossians 3. We're going to begin with the first verse. If you don't, you can look it up on your device, and we may have some of the scriptures as well on the screen. But let me dive in. We're going to look at step one. The first thing we need for our family is we need a better picture. We need a better picture. It says in verse 1, since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. Paul says in that verse a couple significant things. He says, set your hearts on things above. He says, set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. What Paul is saying is don't focus just on what you see today. If we apply it to family, you may feel like you're drowning in your family. Some of you may have kids. You may feel like you're drowning in kids. I love Jim Gaffigan gives this description. He's a comedian. He says, people ask me what it's like to have four kids. He said, it's like you're in a lake and you're drowning and someone throws you a kid. Okay? That's kind of what it feels like. A couple of months ago, we had agreed to watch our grandkids for a few days. Our kids went on a trip for their anniversary, and so they were going to be out of town for about a week, and we agreed to watch the kids while they were gone. Well, after the kids left, or as the kids were leaving, my wife remembered that she actually had an out-of-town trip while we were watching the grandkids, which left me, Mr. Grandpa, alone taking care of an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and an 18-month-old. I am not good in that scenario ever, okay? And so I wake up the first morning. I've got him to myself. I've given him to bed the night before. I wake up the first morning. First of all, I got to get the 8-year-old girl ready for school, for first grade. So I get her dressed, and then she says, Papa, I need to help me comb my hair. Look at this. This is the combing I do. This is all the skill I have is to make this happen. She went to school that day with a ponytail here and one here. It wasn't good, okay? Then the five-year-old decides, I don't like Papa anymore. I'm going to sit in my bed and cry and cry and cry. And I thought, I want to sit in your bed and cry too. This is awful. And then the 18-month-old, I'm not making this up, he was a year at that time. He decided that was the day he no longer eats baby food. I do not like baby food. I do not want baby food. I want adult food. So lunch that day, we went to McDonald's, and he had lots of French fries because he liked French fries. He hated baby food. Then the first grader came home from school, and we kind of got that going, and we kind of worked it out, got some dinner, finally kind of got the girls in bed. It was great. Got the little guy in bed. Longest day of my life until then. Then the little guy decides, you know what? Sleeping is not for me. How about if I hop up for a while? About 11 o'clock that night, he learned for the first time to climb up on the mantle of the fireplace. And he was getting ready to learn how to dive off face first. And I thought, you know what? Let's try bed again. I think bed would be awesome. So I take him back to bed. I get him to calm down. They had a little baby monitor, okay? My bedtime, by the way, I'm an old man. If I hit 10 o'clock, that is a late, crazy party night for me, okay? Now it's about 11:30. I get the little guy in bed. I go lay down in my bed. The baby monitor's in there. I fall asleep, and then I hear about a half hour later something. I wake up, and he is ready to party. And I thought, being a mom, a stay-at-home mom, is the worst, hardest job on the planet, okay? For those of you who do it, I am in awe. And you may feel like that, okay? Or whatever else is going on in your life, you may feel alone. You may feel disconnected. You may see dysfunction and anger with your kids or your spouse or with your parents or wherever you're at. There may be days, maybe not all the time, where you just feel like, I don't know how to make through this. Paul says you need to move your heart and your mind off of what you see, but on to what God sees. And the question I'd love for you to ask yourself today is, what does God see for my family? Your marriage, your kids, your future spouse, your relationship with your parents. What does God see for your family? Two generations ago, if you'd looked at my family, you would have thought, I just don't see much for that family. In fact, our only claim to fame, and you can look this up later, until about two generations ago, is my great-great-great-great-great-grandmother and her son helped conspire to kill Abraham Lincoln. That is not a way to start a conversation, okay? It was a bad thing, all right? Mary Surratt, John Surratt. And then my grandfather, by the time my grandfather came along, he lived in western Oklahoma. He was a dirt farmer. He was also a bootlegger. He was a mess. He was a mean guy. He would get into fights. He carried a gun everywhere he went. One time he caught somebody stealing some of the moonshine from his still, and he got into a gunfight with them and shot them. He got shot with a shotgun, survived that. I mean, this was a mean little dude. And if you had seen his family, you would have said, there is no future for this family except prison or death. And yet God did an incredible thing. One day my grandfather's walking down a dirt road in western Oklahoma, and he's knocked down into the dirt and laying there face first in the dirt in Oklahoma. My grandfather said, God, I don't know if you exist, but if you don't kill me, I'll follow you. And he got up and he started going to the little local church in that little town, and he committed his life to Christ, and he learned more and more about what it meant to be a Christian. Eventually, he became a church planter, and he started planting churches across Oklahoma. His oldest son became a pastor, and then his next son became a pastor. Then his youngest daughter married a pastor. And then their kids started being pastors. And then their grandkids started being pastors. And now, across America today, there are over 25 pastors directly descended from my grandfather preaching somewhere in America. No exaggeration. Surratts are speaking to tens of thousands of people across the country because God looked at my family and said, that's not the picture I see for the future. God, I don't know what God sees for your family, but I know it's not what you might see today. I love the story in the Old Testament when Abraham has, he's left his home, he's left his family, he's moved to where God has called him to, and yet in this new life, he doesn't have any children. He doesn't have a son, which in that society, to not have a son means all of his possessions will be passed to a servant in his household, and he has no family. He has a wife, but no family to share it with. And God comes to him at one point and begins to talk to him, and Abraham says, I don't even know how to enjoy the blessings you're talking about. I don't even have a son. God, I love this verse. You look at it in Genesis. God says, come outside. Come outside, Abraham. Why does he have him go outside? Because he needs a different perspective. He needs to see things from a different direction. And he says, Abraham, look up into the sky. One of my wife and I's favorite things to do in Colorado is we love to go up into the mountains and at night, and we'll go camping, and late at night we'll turn off all the lights, we'll put the campfire down, and we'll just sit in our camp chairs and look up into the sky and see the millions of stars and the planets and the moon and the Milky Way. And God says to Abraham, look up into the sky. Now count the stars. And I think about that story, that scene. Can't you see Abraham? Because he's a pretty literal guy. Okay, 352,421, 352,400, oh, shooting star. One, two, can't you see the angel saying, and Abraham, it was an illustration. You can't count the stars. And he said, as the stars of the sky are, so are going to be your descendants. What God was saying is, Abraham, what you see today is not the family I see. What you see as your reality now is not the reality forever. And that's what we start with, is a new picture for your family. The picture you have today, no matter how good it is or challenging it is, it's not the picture that God has for the future. Focus on the possibility, not the probability. Let me say that again. Focus on the possibility, not the probability. Here's a question I love to ask. If nothing were impossible and God were to show up, what would your family be like in a year, in 5 years, in 20 years, in 50 years? What would be said about your family if nothing were impossible? Which, by the way, nothing is impossible. And if we're God to show up, and by the way, he is, what would happen in your family? So a fixer-upper family begins with a better picture, God's picture. The second step of a fixer-upper house, a fixer-upper family, is demo day. I love demo day. If you watch the show, that's when Chip comes in. One time he put on a football helmet and he ran through a wall to tear it out. I mean, that's a lot of fun. And in our lives, demo day may not be quite as much fun as it is on fixer-upper, but it's incredibly important. Paul says next in Colossians chapter 3, he says, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. He says there's some things that need to be demoed in your own life, that need to be demoed in your family. And then he goes on to give a list of things. And I really encourage you today or tomorrow to sit down with Colossians 3 and look through that list and understand, God, what are you saying to me? What are you saying in our family? In the midst of that list are some things that may need to be demoed in your family. Things like anger and rage and lying. These are the kinds of things that destroy families. In order to see God's better picture come to life in your family, what needs to be put to death? And it's not just things that you're doing now. It might be the past. What hurts need to be dealt with? Do you need to sit down with a spouse and say, I got to tell you, when you do that, that hurts. Do you need to sit down with a mom or a dad and say, hey, there's some stuff in the past. I don't want to just drag everything up, but I want to work through some stuff. Are there some things that need to be forgiven and let go of that you say, oh, that doesn't bother me anymore? Guess what? When you say that doesn't bother me anymore, that tells me that bothers you. And we need to deal with it. We need to forgive it. Are there some ways of interacting in your family that just, they need to stop? They need to end. You need to eliminate these ways of interacting. And maybe for you, you immediately think of, yeah, I agree. My husband needs to stop being so angry. My dad needs to stop yelling. My kids need to start doing what I need to do. And all that may be important, but what's awesome about demo day is you have complete control over one person. You have complete control over yourself. You may not be able to change what other people do, but you can completely change today, starting today, how you interact in your family. You have total power to change you. What if you just started with one place? What if you just started with your words? What if you started with, how do I speak to my mom, to my dad, to my spouse, to my kids? How do I speak to the friends that are around me? How do you talk about your family? This is a big deal. When I'm with guys and I hear guys are kind of putting down their wife around the other guys, I think, that is so destructive. That is such a terrible, terrible idea. When you talk about your kids to other people, I mean, you know, we're not talking about being fake and, you don't have to be Instagram you all the time, but you just be uplifting about your kids, about your mom, about your dad, about your families. What if you determined, this was just a challenge, okay, Thanksgiving's coming up in a couple, 2 weeks, something like that? What if until Thanksgiving you took this challenge? For 2 weeks, till Thanksgiving, I'm only going to speak positive words about my family. I'm only going to talk positively about my mom, about my dad. When I say that, I'm talking about me, okay? My dad's 84 years old. For the next 2 weeks, can I only say positive things to my dad and about my dad, to my spouse, about my spouse, to my kids, and about my kids? Let's do some demo work. And then the third step in the show and in our lives is new construction. See, it's not just enough to get out the bad stuff. I mean, for Joanna to draw this picture, this new picture of the house, and then for Chip to go in and rip out all the walls and the fireplace and the flooring, and then stop, then you have a pretty ugly space, right? Now it's time to do the fun stuff, to do the new construction. Paul goes on in the next verse of Colossians 3, and he says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself." Listen to this. I love this verse. "Clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you." You want to fix her upper family. You have total control over this piece. What if this became the way you connected with your family? If you thought daily about how can I have compassion? How can I show kindness? How can I be humble in my home and when I interact with my family? What if my lead is gentleness instead of anger, patience instead of impatience, forgiveness instead of hanging on to things, and we build new things into our families? Now, I have to be honest, this doesn't really come naturally for me. I mean, I wish it did, but it doesn't. As you probably have picked up, sarcasm is my love language, which my wife has explained is not a love language. And it's, she's also said it's not a spiritual gift, but we're still in negotiations over that. But unfortunately, it's not just my sense of humor. It's deeper inside of me. I don't know if you've taken the Strength Finders test, but these things of compassion and gentleness and kindness, they're not on my Strength Finders. They don't show up. It's just not my natural bent, which is not an excuse in any way. I have to seek input. I have to ask for feedback. There are many times I have to sit down with my wife or she sat down with me and I've said, hey, here's an interaction that I've had today. And I remember when I don't work in an office now. I've been a pastor for 36 years on different roles in different churches. Now I get the opportunity, the privilege of going around and coaching different churches and around the U.S. and in Europe. But when I worked in an office environment, I remember more than once coming home to my wife and saying, the strangest thing happened today. I don't know how to explain it. I was talking to so-and-so, a lady that I work with, and while I was talking to her, I looked over and water was coming out of her eyes. I don't know if she had sinus problems. I don't know what. It was weird. And then she kind of got like emotional and walked out. My wife would always say, "What did you do?" And I didn't do anything. "What did you say?" And I'd go, "Well, I said this and this," and I said, "You know what, you probably need to do this, and this isn't working." And she said, "Oh, no, you have got to go apologize." I said, "Why?" "You can't talk to people like that." And she's had to walk me through how to talk to people so that water doesn't come out of their eyes. I mean, and, you know, learn. The Bible would call it speaking the truth in love. I got the truth part down. It's the love part that I struggle with. I don't know if that's you or not. But however you need to do it, if you struggle with compassion and gentleness, kindness and forgiveness, get people into your life that'll speak into you and then learn to accept feedback. I'm not good at that either. And my wife will say, gosh, when you said that, that hurt my feelings. And my first reaction to that is, I don't even know what you mean. I was just being funny. And then to learn it's not funny if I'm the only one who's laughing. And to learn to go, oh man, I messed up. I'm so sorry. And you just learn to do that. One thing that's helped us, and it's a little different than what you would think, but one thing that's helped us, and I just want to challenge you with this, if you're married, okay? And I talked to Dad yesterday a little bit about this. But if you're married, a few years ago, my wife and I went to a marriage conference. And during the marriage conference, one of the guys challenged me personally, and said, Jeff, you know what? If you don't pray with your wife every day, I don't think you're much of a man. Now, you can challenge me on a lot of things, but don't challenge me on being a man. And here's the sad thing is we've been married for years, been a pastor for years, and yet this praying together thing had never worked for us. It had been just super awkward, and, you know, I'm standing, and we're staring at each other, and I'm, like, talking to Jesus and looking at her, and I'm talking to Jesus about her, and it just was icky. We just, ugh. And we tried it because we felt guilty. And finally, when the guy challenged me and said, well, you're not a man if you don't pray for your wife, I'm like, all right, we're going to do this. So I went home, and the next day I said, all right, we're going to pray. Here we go. She's like, well, why are we praying? Because Jerry said I'm not a man if I don't pray over you, so get over here, I'm praying over you. It wasn't quite that bad, but almost. And here's what I did, guys. I just wrapped my arms around her because physical touch is my love language, and so I wrapped my arms around her and held her really, really tight. And there's my deep spiritual theological prayer. God, man, I love my wife, and I know you love her too. And as she goes to work today, will you go with her? Will you walk with her? Will your spirit just be on her? Thank you, Jesus. Amen. That was it. That was a prayer. Then I overheard my wife talking to some other ladies a few months later because every day we started to do that. Every day I'd just wrap my arms around her and say a simple prayer like that. And I overheard her tell some ladies, you know what? That has meant so much to me. That has connected us so deeply. I so appreciate that. Now, through the years, it's morphed, and now we sit together and share needs, and it doesn't bother us all to pray together. In fact, it's one of my favorite parts of the day, but it took years to get there, and I'm challenging you guys. One of the things you can build, if you're not praying, just if you're married, if you're not praying for your spouse, start praying for in the morning, tomorrow morning. And you say, well, we have little kids running around, we have different schedules and all that. If you timed me, that was 10 seconds. That was a 10-second prayer. And if little kids are running around and all that, what a great thing for them to see daddy grab their mommy and pray over her. If you're single, you can still pray over your kids, pray over your parents, pray for whatever, but let your kids see prayer. Okay. Last thing. So we start with a new picture. We do the demo work. We do the new construction. And then the last thing that happens on Fixer Upper is the finish work. And Paul says in Colossians chapter 3, and over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Paul's talking about binding virtues together, but I think it's equally applicable to our family, that love is what binds us together as a family. Because if your family is like my family, it's a variety of pack of people. We have introverts and extroverts. We have people who are really good at kindness and people who aren't really good at kindness. And marriage might be by birth. Marriage might be by marriage. Family might be by birth. Family might be by marriage. It might be by just proximity. But love is the thing that binds us together. And when Paul talks about love, you have to understand this isn't just puppies and rainbows kind of love. This is gritty, go to the cross, die, get stoned to almost to death, be shipwrecked, almost die for each other. It's that kind of love that binds us together. See, we all have fixer-upper families. I got together with a friend this week who lives here in Columbus. He's an amazing young guy. He has planted a church here. It's a really, really cool church. And he's a man's man kind of guy. He's a football player in college, CrossFit kind of guy. And as we were talking about his family, he said, well, it's been a little bit of a rough period for us. He said, you know, I have our daughter, and then we had our son. And as you know, that our son, after when he was about 3 years old, was diagnosed with autism. And he said, I had all these dreams about father-son stuff and teaching them to play football and going on camping trips, all these things we were going to do. And he said, I don't know what that's going to be like. And I'd come to grips with that, come to terms with it's going to be different. He said, then my wife got pregnant again, and we weren't planning on having a third child at all. We were surprised. Then we found out it was going to be a boy. And he said, honestly, I felt like, man, this is going to be awesome. We're all going to be around my middle son who has autism, but I'm also still going to do the things I thought I was going to be able to do with my son. And he said, about 3 years ago, we had our second child. And he said, 2 months ago, he was diagnosed with autism. And he said, I looked at my family. I love my family, but this is not the picture I had for my family. And it's so hard for my wife and for me and just kind of walking through this. And he said, just in the last couple weeks, he said, God has spoken this to me. He said, there's a verse in Ephesians that says, God can do immeasurably beyond what you can ask or imagine. And he said, God has said to me, do you think that because two of your sons have autism, I can't do immeasurably beyond what you ask or imagine? Do you think the only picture for your family is what you can imagine? Do you not think that the picture I have that's beyond what you could even imagine could be better than the picture you created? He said, you know, in the last couple weeks, I've really had peace that my family's not the picture of the family I thought I was going to have, but it's the family that God created for me, and he has an incredible picture of that family. I'd love for you just to close your eyes where you're at right now. You know, for some of you, this may be kind of a foreign concept, God's picture for your family, because you've never followed Jesus in your own life. You've never come to a point in your life where you've said, God, I give you my whole life, my family, my future family, my kids. I just want to follow you. I want to be forgiven. The worship team is going to sing a song in a minute. And during that song, you could pray that prayer and say, God, just forgive my past. I want to live for you in my future. And you could begin to see God's picture in your family. For the rest of us, some of you, just your family's just amazing right now, and that's fantastic. And I encourage you during the next few minutes just to worship God. Say, God, thank you for what's happening. And for some today, this has been a painful message. If you had known it was about family, you might not have come today because it might hurt so bad. And I just want you to know that the picture God has for your family is beyond what you could ask or imagine. Let's just take the next few moments as we sing about billions of stars that God has created to let God infuse us with what he imagines. Let me pray for you. Father, I pray for every person here. I pray for the mom or the dad or the son or the daughter who's never followed you. I pray that this is a day that they take that first step of faith. Lord, I pray for families that are struggling, Lord. Lord, you know the struggles. Lord, we pray for a change in their family, that they'll see your picture and new work will begin. Lord, we lay this all before you and we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's worship together.